you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
You are about to explore the world of the Black Death. In 1348, the plague arrived in Italy. It spread rapidly across Europe and was not stopped by land or sea. When it was all over, as many as 60% of the inhabitants of Europe lay dead. We sent a soldier ahead of you to explore this world. She returned with tales of ghost towns and mass graves. Fields were overgrown and sheep and goats wandered through the empty parish churches. The soldier wandered through manor houses and cottages where she found bodies decomposing in their beds. Even the great cities were shells. There were squatters living in palaces. The markets were eerily silent. It was as though the inhabitants of some happy golden age were wiped out and replaced with a small, shell-shocked band of refugees that haunted wide-eyed beneath the marble edifices. Perhaps worse than the sheer volume of death was the way the plague killed. Our soldier described in graphic detail the buboes, swollen, pus-filled lymph nodes, which sprouted on the neck, groin, and armpits of its victims. Within mere days, the buboes split, not only outside the body, but also internally, so that the victims became septic. Pain, fever, unquenchable thirst, stench, incontinence, hallucinations. Death was a merciful end. But even this was not the worst part of the Black Death. Far worse still was the psychological terror that lived in the people's hearts. They believed the world was coming to an end. At any moment, the earth would crack, and out would pour an army from hell. Just as the sight of death scarred the senses, the booming drums of Satan's army filled their nightmares and brought society into the realm of insanity. Your costume hangs on those hooks. Please put it on now while I finish your orientation. We're sending you to the year 1348, the same year the Black Death arrived in Italy. We've set up an apprenticeship for you with a barber in Florence. Barbers in these times do a lot more than simply cut hair. They are also surgeons, which means you'll be letting blood, removing teeth, that kind of thing. We've been assured this Giovanni Basso, as he's called, is one of the best in Florence. Oh, and make sure you call him Master Basso. He doesn't like being called by his first name. There are lots of great things to see in Florence. Many of the great works of architecture are newly built. The cathedral doesn't have its dome yet, but Giotto's baptistry, with its famous panels, is brand new. And those famous bridges across the Arno are only a few years old. I'm sure you'll also enjoy all the new churches with their stunning facades and ornate interiors, and maybe you'll get to meet the people who built them. To be honest, if it weren't for the plague, I'd be a little jealous. Well, don't you look the part? I do like the puffy sleeves, and the apron makes you look like a real guildsman. I'm sure you'll fit right in. Please, step onto the platform, and we'll get you on your way. You're going to feel a bit wheezy, and you won't remember where you are at first. It will pass. In your pocket, you'll find a piece of paper with Master Basso's address. When you come to, find him, and he'll take you in. What if you catch the plague, you ask? Well, unfortunately, we can't rescue you. All I can say is, try your best to stay healthy and avoid any contact with the disease. Good luck.
Just do what I say in there.
Master Giovanni Basso sits next to you on the wooden bench, fidgeting with his gloves.
It's no different than any other ailment. We treat it, we cure it, we get paid.
Master Basso is in his 50s. He has a full beard, half white, half black, and he's big. His arms are like granite buttresses on the side of a cathedral.
Here, wrap your scarf around your nose and mouth. Try not to breathe too deep when we're in there.
Do you really think we should be doing this? You ask.
It'll be good for business. Here's a sprig of sage. Put it in your scarf and make sure you breathe through it.
Have you ever done this before?
You ask too many questions. Just do what I say and everything will be fine.
The door opens and a priest steps out of the darkness. He unwraps a scarf from around his face and takes a deep breath, as though he'd been holding it while in the room.
How is he, Father?
Delirious. He speaks the language of the devil, and he won't take confession. Truly, he is going to hell.
What about the disease? How are the buboes?
The priest looks at Master Basso with surprise.
I deal in matters of the spirit, not in buboes. Excuse me.
He walks quickly down the hall and exits through the front door.
Useless priest, Master Basso says once he's gone.
He then rises and takes his bag.
Grab that,
he says, pointing to your bucket filled with towels and other things. You both take a deep breath and open the door. It's dark inside the room, and your eyes sting from a haze of smoke. Even through the sprig of sage, you can smell a rich orchestra of burnt herbs, spices, and church incense. The only light in the room is cast from a single candle that sputters in the haze. As your eyes adjust, you see a bed at the end of the room. In the bed is a man, moaning and twisting in pain. This must be the wool merchant.
Go draw those curtains and open a window, quick. Let's get some fresh air in here.
You open a window. A flock of pigeons flap into the sky, and your eyes sting as the sun pours in. Before you is spread the city of Florence. The buildings are whitewashed, and their roofs are capped with orange terracotta tiles, giving the city a brilliant sheen in the late summer sun. In the center of town is Giotto's bell tower, rising like a white obelisk. Next to it is the Duomo, the cathedral, still covered in scaffolding.
Bring your bucket, Master Basso says. You pick it up and walk over to the bed. With his big arm, Master Basso slides the contents of the night table onto the floor. Strange astronomical objects and stale potions scatter on the stone. Master Basso places his bag on the table and unpacks its contents. Glass cups, tubes, a bottle of leeches, and his ever-present barber's blade. Then he turns his attention towards the man in the bed. He yanks off the covers, revealing a tortured body in a nightgown. The man is drenched in sweat. Even through the sage and other aromas, you can smell the defecation. With his barber's blade, Master Basso cuts open the nightgown, revealing the merchant's shivering body. The bright red buboes under the armpits and in the groin are the size of hen's eggs. Hand me the straps. You reach into your bucket and pull out a set of long leather straps. Master Basso grabs a couple and starts wrapping them around the merchant's wrists and ankles. Well, what are you waiting for? Do the same on your side. When the straps are tightened, the merchant lies, and with arms and legs spread wide, he shivers and moans, but his tormented body isn't strong enough to resist. Now the towels. You pull out a handful of towels and hand them to Master Basso. He folds them and stuffs them under the merchant's armpits and groin. The pan. You reach in your bucket and pull out what looks like a scoop for measuring seeds in the market. Master Basso walks over to your side of the bed, holding his barber's knife. Place the pan snugly under the armpit, right there, under the buboe. You feel a sickening sensation in your throat as you realize what's about to happen. You're not going to... What, have you something to say? He stares at you, his eyes burning coals. You're the apprentice, I'm the master, and you will not question me. You drop your eyes to the ground. In a moment, there's a scream from the wool merchant. He howls in an unearthly rage, as though it really were the devil that possessed his body. You feel a sickening splunk as something lands in your pan. Then you hear the pop of Master Basso's vinegar jar. There's a splash, and the merchant screams again. Get a hold of yourself, Master Basso says to you. How are you ever going to become a barber, retching and sobbing at a little pus? Now empty the pan. You're doing the next one. You spend your days with Master Basso in the barbershop, where a steady stream of patients come and go. Master Basso has taught you how to bleed the patients with leeches, needles, and heated cups. He teaches fast, and within only a few weeks, you're able to set bones, perform enemas, and cauterize wounds on your own. Master Basso performs all the surgeries. He amputates limbs, bores holes in skulls, and removes tumors, hernias, and kidney stones. He mixes the hemlock used as an anesthetic, and you hold down the patient in case they wake up while under the knife. As a side business, Master Basso sells whatever blood is left over to a local pig farmer. There was a law passed by the town council that only allows the blood of the rich to be eaten by pigs. But the rule is hard to enforce, and Master Basso always sends the swineherd away with a cartload full of buckets. Once a week, you're given a day off, and you spend it wandering the streets of Florence. The barbershop looks onto the Piazza San Firenze, which was once the heart of the old Roman city.
There are shops around the square where you can find produce, clothes, meats, and any other necessity. Your favorite place to visit is, of course, the cathedral. It's a 10-minute walk down the street and is still under construction. It's exciting to see the wooden cranes haul up massive stones to the walls. You watch excitedly as the sculptors, blacksmiths, and painters make the decorations. Sometimes you see the Grandmaster himself, Andrea Pisano, the disciple of the great Giotto. You live in Master Basso's attic, while he and his young 20-something wife, his second marriage, and their infant son live on the second floor. You often hear their whispered arguments through the floorboards. Sometimes it's about money. Other times it's about his implacable stubbornness. But lately, it's about the plague. How many deaths will it take for you to realize that we can't stay here? How many of our neighbors? How many of our friends?
Beatrice, I'm not leaving the city. I've told you, my work is here. My life is here.
It's not going to be much of a life if it's taken by the plague. And in your line of work, you're more at risk than anyone. What's going to happen if you catch it? Will you bring it home to me and your son? Or will you wander off and die alone in a pension?
Enough! I won't listen to your raving. Me dying alone in a hotel. What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with me? You're putting us all in danger by forcing us to stay in the city. Why can't we visit my parents, just until it passes?
You know I can't do that. I'm a master. If I leave the city, the council could have me killed.
We'll only visit my parents. That's within the law, isn't it?
I'm not going to sulk away with my tail between my legs to your parents. And besides, they're younger than me. And they're peasants. What would people say about me? It's ridiculous. Me going to live with peasants.
They're not peasants. They own their own land, and plenty of it. And who says anything about sulking away? We're simply visiting my parents. That's all anyone needs to know.
We're not leaving, and that's final. Now I'm going to sleep. Not another word.
On Sundays, you visit the church with the family. It's an old Byzantine building from the 6th century that could double as a fortress. It will soon be destroyed, replaced by something more elegant, but that's in the future. For now, the church is dark inside, with only a few tiny windows in the thick walls, and the interior is lit by candles that make the gold mosaics sparkle and cast shadows on the priests as they perform their sacred duties. These culminate in chanting and singing. An incense boat swings dramatically across the room, spewing out the scent of frankincense, myrrh, styrax, and copal. Master Basso yawns. After the Latin Mass, the priest lectures the parishioners on the end of days. He speaks of the army of Satan, of the coming of the Lord, and of the rising of the dead to be judged. One of the parishioners calls up to the pulpit, "Do you believe, Father, that we're living in the end times?" There is a long pause. The priest isn't used to people shouting out at him. Finally, he says,
"Yes, I do believe that."
A murmur spreads through the pews.
"And the army of Satan, will it come to Florence?"
"It may, yes."
What can we do? How can we survive? I mean, long enough to join the Lord.
Even now, the Lord is dividing the wheat from the chaff, separating good from evil. To save yourself from the pestilence, you must purify your soul and wash away your sins. Soon he will come down from heaven and lead us to glory.
But what about those who've already died? Our husbands and wives, and our children? Are they in hell?
The priest looks caught off guard. If they confessed and were true believers, then they will rise again.
Master Basso stands. That's ridiculous. Telling people their wives and husbands died of their own sins. You should be ashamed of yourself.
The crowd is stunned, and the priest looks flustered, angry.
You know what I think caused the plague? The Jews. They've always hated us, and now they're getting their revenge.
And just how are they causing the plague?
By poisoning the wells.
The priest now looks confident and gives a well-rehearsed answer. The Jews are not at fault, my son. They are falling to the pestilence just as we are, and have done so in vast numbers in other cities. No, it's not the Jews. It is our sins that have caused this pestilence. We must purge ourselves of them. Now let us pray.
Ridiculous, Master Basso says, sitting down. You could tan leather with that priest's words.
One day, a middle-aged woman arrives at the barbershop. She approaches Master Basso and hands him a bag of coins. He questions her in sharp whispers before turning to his patrons.
That's it. We're closing shop early today.
Then he turns to you.
Finish your bleeding and pack up the tools.
What's going on? You ask.
We have another plague victim to treat.
You feel your knees go weak. The woman lives in a run-down apartment on the south side of the Arno. Master Basso looks disappointed.
Are you sure you can afford this?
He asks the woman.
Just come in, she says.
The front room is dark. It appears to be acting as a kitchen and looks like it hasn't been cleaned in days. There are dishes piled up and a rat scuttles under the table.
Where is he?
He's just through here.
Now wait, don't open the door just yet. We aren't ready.
He turns to you.
Do you have the sage?
I didn't know I had to bring it.
You forgot it? Imbecile apprentice, I'll knock your teeth out.
It's okay, we have some sage, if you need it.
As the woman rustles through her cupboards, a door opens and a young, attractive girl with full lips and long, curly hair pokes her head out. She smiles at you and you feel your face warm with a flush.
Maria, go back to your room,
the woman says. The door closes a crack, though you can still see the girl looking through.
Ah, here's the sage.
Now hold on just a moment. How do I know you have the other half of the payment? Let me see it.
The woman shifts and stutters. Finally, she puts her hand awkwardly on his arm.
I'm sure we can come to some kind of arrangement.
He swats her hand away.
I want money, not this.
He points at her body, then turning to you.
Come on, we're leaving.
Wait.
This time it's the voice of the daughter. She walks slowly towards Master Basso.
Wait, let me.
She puts her hand on Master Basso's arm where her mother had it a moment ago.
Maria, go back to your room. You're too young.
No, Mother. I want to do this. I have to. For Father's sake. Besides, he's handsome enough.
Master Basso is flustered and, for the first time, speechless.
You said you wanted to see your final payment. Let me show you.
Her hand is like a kitten's paw in his burly mitt. Pulling the string on her blouse, she begins to walk him slowly to her room. Master Basso tries to say something, but stutters over his words. Finally, he whispers to you, "Wait outside." Over the next 2 days, Master Basso leaves the barbershop at noon and doesn't return for hours. On the third day, he doesn't return at all. Over dinner, Beatrice asks if he'll have a look through the taverns. Apparently, he's disappeared before. The night changes the streets. Your torch gives them a haunted, dangerous look. There are plague carts going around, piled with bodies. Men in black robes with shadowy faces knock on doors collecting the dead. They give you the shivers. You find the apartment of the mother and daughter. There's a cross, rudely painted in black pitch, on the door, the sign of death. You knock. The door opens a crack. A middle-aged woman appears in your torchlight. Her eyes are red, bloodshot from crying.
Hi, I came here the other day with Master Basso.
May he burn in hell, says the woman.
What happened?
What happened? Your Master Basso destroyed my family, that's what happened. He killed my husband with his useless medicines. And he ruined my daughter. I hope he meets the devil. I hope his dirty, stinking flesh is burned from his body.
I suppose you don't know where he is.
The woman slams the door in your face, and the torch flickers. Across the street is a man, staggering, drunk.
Excuse me, where can I find the nearest tavern?
You open the shop without Master Basso the next morning. You start taking patients and have to turn away a small but desperate crowd begging you to cure the plague. Around noon, Master Basso finally staggers downstairs. He reeks of last night's alcohol. "Send them away," he says.
"Yes, Master Basso. I just have to finish bleeding this one patient."
"I said send them away, now!" He heads back upstairs.
"All right, you heard the master."
The people grumble as they file out. You close the shop and head upstairs, a bit nervous. You're surprised to see Beatrice is in a good mood. "Up, we're heading out to the cottage today."
"We are?"
"No, not you. You're staying here."
"I am?"
"We don't want anyone robbing the place, and I expect you to turn a profit while we're gone. You can keep 10% of everything that the shop makes."
10% for doing all the work?
"How dare you? This is my shop, and you're my apprentice. You're lucky to keep a single florin. Would you rather I throw you out on the street?"
"No, of course not."
"No, Master Basso."
"No, Master Basso." "Be nice to him, Giovanni. He's your apprentice, after all," Beatrice says.
"I am being nice to him. You haven't seen mean yet."
Then turning to you,
"Go and hire a wagon. You can take a load downstairs on your way out."
"Yes, Master Basso."
Feeling your blood boil, you head downstairs with a box of Master Basso's clothes and drop it on one of the operating tables. When you open the door, you find the crowd is still there. In fact, it's growing. You have to elbow your way through. A nobleman dressed in silk approaches as you cross the street.
Is this Master Basso's house?
Yes, but you won't see him for a while. If you have any non-plague-related issues, I'd be happy to see you tomorrow.
What's wrong with Master Basso?
Nothing's wrong. Well, maybe a slight hangover. He's leaving town.
The nobleman looks surprised.
I need to see him now, if you don't mind. I'm from the city council.
Oh, you're a councillor. Of course. Please, right this way.
You take the counselor through the crowd. Leaving him in the shop, you hop up the stairs.
Master Basso, come, quick! There's a counselor down in the shop.
Master Basso's face goes white.
A counselor? From the city council?
Well, yes, of course.
Did you tell him I'm leaving town?
Yes, I am taking over while you're away, after all.
Master Basso slams his fist into your jaw. Your knees buckle and you crumble to the ground in a sea of stars. Beatrice screams,
"Get up, you useless son of a tanner!"
You struggle to pull yourself up the leg of a table. Your jaw is on fire.
"Do you know what could happen to me? They'll kill me! A master doesn't leave the city!"
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Come on. Let's go find out what he wants.
You follow Master Basso downstairs. He smiles at the counselor, who gives him only a half-cocked smile in return.
Master Basso, I hear you're leaving us.
No. Nothing like that. Just visiting my wife's parents. They're sick, and my wife is very upset. I'll just be gone a week. Maybe just a few days if we don't meet bad weather.
I'm very sorry to hear about your in-laws. I hope it isn't the plague.
Oh no, nothing as serious as that. Just a common illness, nothing serious.
Well, maybe I could convince you to stay. I understand you treated a wool merchant not long ago.
Yes, the one with the plague. Did he survive?
He did. In fact, he's made a full recovery.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes, it is. Do you realize he is the only known case in the city who has been cured of the plague?
No, I did not.
He had all the best doctors and astrologers treat him, and it was you who managed to cure him.
Well, there is no cure, really. I just lanced his buboes and cleaned them.
Regardless, you did save his life, and that's more than anyone else could do. We would like to offer you a position with the city. We're in need of a highly skilled plague doctor.
It's an honor, but I promised my wife, and really I don't know how to cure the plague.
You will be well rewarded. Whatever you make as a barber will be doubled. This is not something we offer all our plague doctors.
Doubled? Well, that is something. And again, I'm honored, but it's a dangerous business, the plague. It spreads through the air, and the more contact you have with it, the more likely you are to catch it. The money, I'm not sure it's worth it.
We will make you our city's head plague doctor. All the other doctors will be subservient to you. You will guide the operations and keep track of the dead. To help you, we have rescinded the law banning autopsies so you can examine the bodies. When the plague is cured, you will be able to run for a city council, and with that comes further opportunities, as I'm sure you can imagine. It's a chance to enter the ranks of our nobility.
City council, you say? There's wizardry in your words.
Adjusting to your new life as a plague doctor's apprentice is shocking. All the surgeries, the amputations, bleedings, and trepanations could not prepare you for this nightmarish existence. You work the streets at night, dressed in thick black wool, and wear a mask. You are the very specter of death. Children run in terror from you. It is you who step into the houses of death to treat the raving mad. It is you who lead a team of hired beggars and thieves to remove the corpses. And it is you who paint the black cross on the door as you leave. As the months drag on, the plague worsens. Construction on the cathedral grinds to a halt. There is an exodus from the city. People fill their carts with baggage and furniture and pour out of the gates in long lines. You wonder where they're going. How many farmhouses and manors are there to fight over? How many will give up and die along the road? With the plague comes disorder, chaos in the streets. The guilds double their efforts to enforce the law, but their members are part of the problem. They turn to pillaging the abandoned homes and apartments. When people are found still living in them, they rob them anyhow. Violence, murders, and assaults increase daily. One day, the flagellants arrive in town. Convinced it is the sin of man that has caused the plague, they whip and cut themselves as they parade through the streets. Their numbers swell daily, and their madness is more horrifying than the plague itself. In the morning, they are exuberant, ecstatic, fresh with a flood of new converts that dance and scream until their voices are hoarse. But when day turns to night, the parade trickles down to the most devout who, in exhaustion from pain and loss of blood, stagger slowly, bent and silent through the streets, shivering with every snap of the whip. And then there are the executions. Though the Pope himself issued 2 papal bulls ordering the Jews to be spared, they are still hunted and burned at the stake by the radical townsfolk, who claim the pestilence was their fault. Drawing and quartering, hanging and pressing become daily events, not only in the main square, but in the streets and alleys where the victims are found. Throughout all this, Master Basso has become increasingly distant, morose, even violent. He drinks more, he disappears for long periods and shows up drunk and smelling of cheap perfume. When he does work, it seems to you he takes a sick joy in the terror of his costume and the power it has over those around him. To add to the effect, he purchases a raven's mask instead of the simple scarf you use. It's as though he becomes a creature of death when he puts it on. He walks slowly, and his movements are graceful, like a pope or a dark angel amongst the death. At home, things are tense. The devastation of the plague has turned any hope of a normal home life into a state of survival. Beatrice is shell-shocked and mostly incoherent. Her friends are dead, and she's terrified for her young son. Master Basso acts at times as though he were beyond death, and in fact able to control it. At other times, he breaks down, swearing, smashing and cursing everything and everyone in his path. One evening, he takes you from your work and brings you across town to a tavern. He tells you this is a special tavern, a hidden gem in Florence, where wild things happen. When people lose hope, he says,
It can bring out the worst in people, yes, but also the best. The tavern is packed. There is wild music and singing, drinking and gambling. Some men and women stumble around naked, kissing whoever they like. There are people making love in the dark corners. "You're the plague doctor?" says a bull-like man to Master Basso. He's obviously an enforcer, a bouncer.
"Yes, what of it?"
"We don't want plague doctors here. If anyone's got the pestilence, it's you. Be on your way."
"I won't be on my way."
The bouncer winds up and punches Master Basso in the temple. Before he can recover, the bouncer smashes him 3 more times in the eyes and nose, and there's a sickening crunch. Then Master Basso swings back. Amazingly, the bouncer falls to the ground. The crowd cheers. You try to pull Master Basso off, and he turns, his eyes red with fire. Blood is everywhere. In his hand, he holds his barber's blade. "What have you done?" you say. Master Basso doesn't reply, but a couple women approach and towel him off. They lead him away through the crowd. All the while, he stares back at you with that same fire in his eyes. But the fire isn't anger. It's pleasure. You leave the tavern and wait outside. There are the usual sights and sounds, fights, hookups, prostitutes, lonely, wandering men without the money to pay for them, and those too sick to move. A group of men carry the body of the bouncer to the side of the street and toss it ingloriously into the gutter for the cartmen to fetch. It's not the only body in the street. You wait for hours outside the tavern until finally Master Basso stumbles out. He's more drunk than you've ever seen him, and you hail a horse and cart to take you both home.
"I think I'm breaking," he says, half conscious. "I can't tell what's real anymore."
"What do you mean?"
"Who am I?"
"You're Master Basso, a plague doctor."
"Is that all? There has to be something more than that."
"What do you mean, more?" He picks up his raven's mask and stares into its round eye holes, trying to see into them, trying to see the soul of the mask. Then he puts it on.
"There's more," he says, his voice changed as though succumbing to the mask spell.
"Stop it. Stop pretending to be some kind of evil creature. You're supposed to be curing the plague, not murdering people."
"Is that my role in all this? In these end of days?"
"Take off the mask."
He cocks his head as though he were a raven.
"Take it off." You smack the beak and the mask snaps off. Master Basso's face instantly turns from a devilish smile to rage. He lunges at you, but you manage to jump out of the cart in time. The next evening, you wake and get ready for work. Master Basso acts like nothing happened the night before. Maybe he forgot about the murder or how he lunged at you. Or maybe he's simply managed to justify it to himself. After only a few hours checking in on the sick and carting away bodies, Master Basso is restless.
"Let's take a break. It's time to eat," he says.
"You mean drink," you mumble to yourself. Soon you're at a tavern and Master Basso has ordered a jug of wine and some pasta. "Let's not drink tonight. We have a lot of work to do. What if the town council discovers we're at a tavern instead of working?"
"Relax. Have some olives and bread and finish your glass."
There's a voice behind you. "You may look like the rest of us, but I can see through the clothes." You turn in a cold sweat, but the man is directing his words at someone next to you. "Yes, I know who you are.
You're a Jew.
I think we should leave, you say to Master Basso. The fire is back in his eyes.
No, this could be good.
Well, I'm leaving. I have work to do, and I don't want to be any part of this. Master Basso turns to you with murderous eyes.
If you leave, we're done. I'll make sure you never work another day in Florence, not even burying the dead. You'll have to beg and steal. You'll die in the streets.
You're shocked by Master Basso's sudden wrath, but not surprised. You look at the Jew, cowering in fear as a crowd forms around him. You want to be a part of this? I'd rather die a beggar than spend another moment with you. Master Basso smashes the bar with his massive fist. It cracks the wood and the wine mugs spill over. He grabs you by the neck and pulls out his barber's blade.
If I see you again, I will murder you with this blade. Now get out of Florence.
Wander the streets, trying to cool down. The abuse you've taken from Master Basso over the last few months has been debilitating. It's left you feeling trapped and angry. The self-loathing you felt from accepting his abuse, making excuses for it, has finally boiled over into a seething fire of indignation. At last, you are free of him. But now what? Will you wander into the countryside and die? Better that than spend another moment in this hateful city with that hateful man. You wander into the main square. The half-built cathedral is spread before you like a dead angel, its meat picked clean by ravens, so the granite ribs protrude upwards. So this is the great Duomo of Florence. One day, tourists will take pictures here. Imagine if their cameras could see the rotting corpses that line the square, or the hopeless drunks, or the starving prostitutes, or the thief who murdered a man for a bottle of wine just now. If only the nightmares of these streets could replay themselves like ghosts for those tourists. Then would they take pictures, or would they run in terror? The sound of men yelling. There are flames reflecting on the walls of a side street. Drunken whoops and screams echo through the square. Then the mob appears. You duck into the shadows of the cathedral. Amongst the men is the Jew from the tavern. He looks beat up and he stumbles in pain. And there is Master Basso, wearing his raven's mask and robe. He seems to be leading the mob. Grab wood from the cathedral, he calls out to the crowd. Bring it here and make a pile. The mob runs into the cathedral, searching for wood. You play dead and lie against one of the columns. When the last of the men leaves with arms full, you lean over and watch. Master Basso has tied his victim to a wooden crane used to raise blocks of stone, and is now lighting the pile of wood beneath him. The man pleads desperately with Master Basso as the flames crackle. Soon, his protests turn to screams. You inch your way out of the cathedral and into the square, heading for a side street. Bad timing. Master Basso turns and locks eyes with you. You turn and run. The walls of the buildings glow red around you, and the man's screams echo through your mind long after they've stopped. You run to the gates of Florence. They're open. Beyond is the wilderness, shrouded in the blackness of night. The gentle wind blows invitingly through the cypress trees,
and your heart races at the prospect of freedom. With just one step, you can escape Master Basso and the nightmare that is Florence. But then, the faces of Beatrice and her young infant son flash before your eyes. You enter the barber shop and climb the stairs to the second floor. You wake Beatrice.
Come on, we have to leave, now. What do you mean? Is something wrong?
Master Basso, Giovanni, he's done something terrible.
What? Is he all right?
I saw him just now kill a man.
What are you talking about?
He killed him, tied him to a crane in the square, and burnt him alive. Beatrice looks stunned.
It's not true.
It is, and he killed a man yesterday as well. He was drunk then, and it was a fight, but this time was different. The man was helpless, and Master Basso burnt him alive.
It's not true.
You're not safe with him anymore. I know that now. I'll take you and your son to your parents' home, but we have to leave now before he returns.
This is a lie. You're lying to me. Giovanni was right. You are a rotten apprentice. How could you betray him like this?
Beatrice, listen. You haven't been yourself since the plague started. I can tell you're in shock and things aren't clear. Please trust me when I say that I'm trying to help you.
Get out! I want you and your filthy, lying mouth out of here! Get out now!
He burnt a man alive. I was just there. Please, Beatrice, for your son's sake.
There's a clatter downstairs and your heart stops. The shop door slams. Then you hear the groaning of the wooden stairs under the feet of a giant. You panic. There's nowhere to run.
Giovanni! Come quick!
The creaking stops.
What is it?
Your apprentice. He's in my room.
Your breath quickens. You see a window, the only way out. It's shuttered. You ram it with your shoulder. The glass cracks, but the wooden shutters are locked tight. You kick at them. Then two meaty hands clamp around your neck, and you hear the growling of a bear. Your neck begins to collapse, and your feet rise from the floor. You are flying through the air. You smash into a wall, and one of your arms punches through the plaster. It's dark in the room, but you can see the outline of Master Basso walking towards you. He pulls down his raven's mask, and from a sleeve appears the flash of his barber's blade.
We can do this quick, or we can do this slow. I say we do it slow.
You can't move. Your body is as stiff as death, and your breathing is quick and shallow.
Please, I'll leave Florence. Just let me go, and you'll never see me again.
He steps on your hand, crushing it. Then you hear a dull thud. The dark shape of Master Basso collapses to the side. Behind him is Beatrice, holding a table leg.
He smelled like smoke,
she says. You're in the countryside, staying at Beatrice's family cottage. Her father died of the plague only days before you arrived, but her mother is still alive. The two women are hardly able to cope with the stress and leave most of the work of running the farm to you. Thankfully, it is winter, and the hard labor of harvesting the fields and collecting the blood oranges is done. The work now mostly involves winter tasks, such as patching the cottage's thatch roof or mending the mill. Even as it rains, the farmland is beautiful, picturesque, and there are times when you wander the rolling Tuscan hills that you forget the nightmare around you. Occasionally, you wander onto a neighboring property, but you only ever find death. One blustery evening, there's banging on the door. It's Master Basso. He sounds sick and weak, too weak even to force the door. Giving up,
He coughs outside the door until you eventually can't hear him anymore. You open one of the shutters, peer outside. Nothing but rain and the blackness of night.
"Is he out there?"
Beatrice says, terrified.
"I don't know. Will you go out and see?"
You begin to laugh, but she's serious. She pleads with you relentlessly until finally you put on her father's sheepskin cape and grab a lantern. As an afterthought, you pick up a pitchfork and head out the door. It's miserable outside, and the rain pelts you from the side. You can hardly see through squinted eyes, and Master Basso is nowhere to be found. And then you look to the mill at the bottom of the hill next to the river. You see a faint light coming from the windows. You head down the path towards the light. "Master Basso?" you say, pushing the door open with a pitchfork. You step inside. There's a candle sitting on the edge of the millstone, and the ancient machinery casts long shadows on the walls. "Master Basso, I know you're in here. Let's talk." A raspy cough echoes through the dark corners. "Master Basso, you sound sick. Let me have a look at you." There's a flash of movement at your side, and you stab through the air with your pitchfork. A hen steps into the candlelight. Then a pair of arms wrap around you, and you fall to the ground, face first. You struggle, and Master Basso wheezes and coughs on top of you, his great strength sapped by disease. You manage to turn yourself around. He's wearing the raven's mask.
"God has abandoned us," he says.
"What are you talking about?"
"When Satan rides in, I will not be slaughtered with the rest of you."
"You have the plague, don't you? You're delirious."
"Think of the riches. Once everyone else has been slaughtered, the wealth of the world is mine. Palaces empty, treasuries unguarded. I could be king."
"You're mad, you know that."
"Call me master."
"Get off me, you have the plague."
"Call me master, or I'll slit your throat."
"No,
call me king. I want to hear what it sounds like."
Wrenching an arm free, you punch him in the armpit. He screams in pain and buckles over. But a moment later, he pulls a threshing rake from the hay. He swings the rake in violent arcs, and you stumble backwards to avoid it.
"Call me king," he says.
The rake knocks over the candle, and it ignites the hay. It takes only seconds for the fire to spread across the mill floor and up into the tinder, dry machinery, greased with animal fat. You pick up the pitchfork and stab at Master Basso. It meets its mark and sticks into his gut. He screams and falls to his knees. With trembling hands, he pulls his mask off. His eyes bulge and his teeth are stained with blood. On his neck, you can see the buboes, painfully inflamed. Stumbling slowly forward, he pulls out his barber's blade and knocks away your pitchfork. He lunges at you and presses you against the wall.
"Call me king, you worthless apprentice."
You knee him in the groin and he gasps. Then you kick him squarely in the chest. He stumbles backwards and trips. There's a sickening crunch as he lands on the threshing rake. Master Basso lies there, gurgling, the life slipping from his lips as the flames engulf his body. "Your Highness," you say, and step out of the mill. back at the cottage. You sit with Beatrice at the table. "He's dead," you say. "Ah," she says, no emotion on her face. She doesn't ask how he died or if you killed him. Her hands are shaking. You take them in your own to comfort her. "Everything will be all right now. You're safe." "Ah," she says, still shaking. "What does it matter? The world is ending." You feel lightheaded. There's a tingling under your right armpit. You let go of Beatrice to scratch it. Then your throat itches. It grows unbearable as you try to suppress a cough, and it comes out in a sputter. Beatrice's eyes dart up to you. They are full and terrified, as though she just saw the monster from her nightmares. You sit at the table for a few moments, taking stock of what this means. Finally, you rise and put on your sheepskin robe. Before you disappear into the night, you say to Beatrice, "The world is not ending. I promise."
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. If you enjoyed this show, you'll be happy to know there is a bonus track for this episode. There was a man called Boccaccio who wrote a large book called The Decameron. Not the Necronomicon, the Decameron. A bit like A Thousand and One Nights, this book takes place during the Black Death in Europe. A group of people gather together in the countryside and tell 100 stories to pass the time. I went through them all and selected a handful I really enjoyed and thought worth producing. Boccaccio lived through the Black Death, so he probably wrote the best first-hand account of the plague, which I also include. Have a listen to this sample.
The symptoms were not the same as in the East, where a gush of blood from the nose was the sign of inevitable death. It began both in men and women with a swelling of the groin and under the armpit. They grew to the size of a small apple or an egg, more or less, and were vulgarly called tumors. In a short space of time, these tumors spread all over the body. Soon after this, the symptoms changed. Black or purple spots appeared on the arms or thighs or any other body part. No doctor's advice, no medicine could overcome or alleviate this disease. An enormous number of ignorant men and women set up as doctors, in addition to those who were trained. Either the disease was such that no treatment was possible, or the doctors were so ignorant that they did not know what caused it, and consequently could not administer the proper remedy. In any case, very few recovered. Most people died within about 3 days of the appearance of the tumors, most of them without any fever or other symptoms. The violence of this disease was such that the sick communicated it to the healthy who came near them, just as a fire catches anything dry or oily near it. And it even went further. To speak or to go near the sick brought infection and a common death to the living. And moreover, to touch the clothes or anything else the sick had touched or worn gave the disease to the person touching. Fear took possession of the living, and almost all of them adopted the same cruel policy, which was to avoid the sick and everything belonging to them.
In so doing, each one thought he would be secure. Some thought that moderate living...
If listening to the rest is something you want to do, go over to the website at twilighthistories.com and click on the store. When you purchase something from the store, you are supporting this podcast and you really help motivate me to keep going year after year. What a great way to help these time travel adventures get going. Please visit the website at twilighthistories.com and click on the store. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to the Twilight Histories with Jordan Harbour.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.